Good morning, everybody. It's time for the Pathway Hospice and Palliative Care Show. It's Elder Care Radio, only on News Radio 890-925-KDXU. Here's Richard and Kaylee.
This is Elder Care Radio, and we are excited to be here again and sharing these lovely days in southern Utah. I look out the window here, and Andy has a great view, and it just reminds me again of how ideal this is, especially today with the overcast weather. That usually makes things a little more interesting visually. Yeah. This is the kind of day that photographers just love. So we're happy to be here. Kaylee is on the phone at this point, so she's not in with us in studio yet.
She's not talking to her mom or her cousin or anything. She's talking to a customer.
That's right. We've got clients that need some help, so she's helping them out. So it's just Andy and I so far. But today we wanted to talk about a couple of different things. One of those is the changing nature of healthcare and how you can be a little better involved in that to get more out of it, because things have changed, and I think people still have an image of what they imagine healthcare is, but that image is based upon history, not based upon current events. And so if you have a better understanding of the way things really are, then I think you have a better way of working through that to get the best benefit for yourself. And I don't know about you, Andy, but you know, for me, on my spare time, I just read articles on the National Institute of Health and PubMed and other medical journals. That's the way I spend my time, and it's you can pull up some interesting stuff. And I think that's going to be the takeaway I hope you get, is that doing your own research does have some real benefits, and it doesn't have to be the newest of news. In fact, one of the articles that I read, and it just it kind of coalesced and gave me a really good understanding of what where everybody's at in this healthcare system. It's called The Changing Nature of Healthcare, Evidence-Based Medicine and the Changing Nature of Healthcare. And this is off of the NIH's website again. And this is actually written in 2007, 2008. But it provides kind of this history. And we all have an imagination of what our healthcare system is, but if you don't realize that it's moved beyond that, then you're going to be stuck. And so it started out, the article says, the 20th century witnessed many truly revolutionary advances in healthcare. Gave some examples. In 1954, the first transplant of an organ happened.
Wow.
That's, one in that year. And then in 2007, he said over 28,000 transplants are happening. I mean, that's huge growth. And those advancements have made a huge impact on people's lives. They've extended life. They've made life better for many, many people. And they go through a lot of other examples that I think we can all imagine. The advancements in biotech and medical developments, they said between 1991 and 2003, the number of medical patents doubled.
Right. Wow. In 12 years. Huh?
So there's a whole lot more progress that had happened through that time. But then there was another article that I pulled up that kind of gave a different perspective on that. And it talked about how, we aren't as satisfied with the healthcare that we're getting. And it's not because there's not technology out there. It's not that there's not information out there. In fact, the biggest problem is that the information that's out there is so vast that nobody can contain that, all for themselves. And so when we're expecting our doctors to be able to handle that, that makes it very difficult for us to just expect that they're keeping up reading, spending their weekends reading journals and, the NIH website. They just can't do that, and they don't have the time to spend. So they talked about 60% of Americans said they did not believe the United States had the best healthcare system in the world anymore. Mm. And that 41% knew of a time that they or their family member received the wrong care. And we had mentioned a number of months ago, maybe a year ago, if you calculate in medical error, it becomes the second leading cause of death in the U.S. And I don't want you to blame doctors. I don't want you to blame the people that are providing care, because that's not really the issue. There's a lot of different nuances to this that we're going to try and cover today. But what they started with was it says the underlying shortfall in the system is struggling to contend with the changing nature of healthcare, from shifting patient demographics and disease burden to increasing complexity of therapy and treatment options and factors to consider as part of the clinical decision making. So, as a physician, you know, our medical care has changed significantly. It used to be that doctors didn't get involved until somebody had some critical immediacy type of a problem where they really, you know, somebody was critically ill and we jumped in and saved that. And that was the focus. And when you're focusing on those specific staccato events in life, it's easy to address those. But healthcare has changed. Now 78% of the healthcare budget is spent on chronic problem management.
Yeah.
And some other statistics came out of this that were just almost amazing to me. 50% of those people who have a chronic illness have more than one.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you think it's caused by the other one, maybe? They're related?
Well, okay, so we can go down that rabbit hole.
Yeah.
That, you know, when we try and correct one thing, let's say we try and correct arterial disease, right? And we start using drugs to reduce cholesterol. Then those do have an impact somewhere else. And so we've got these other problems, but it's not just medical. Certainly our lifestyle, our diet contributes to a lot of problems. You know, when we're having kidney failure and all those other things that are happening, many of those can be affected by our diet and our choices. And that's one of the things that is going to come up in this discussion today is that, you know, not only are we responsible for our own medical, you know, best practice, but the medical community has left our own healthcare in our own hands and said, you guys have to take control of this. So Kaylee's back in studio now, just
woohoo.
Yeah. So problem averted?
Yeah.
Okay, good. So we'll talk about this model.
And not kind of, a big problem. More help than anything.
Oh, no, we're always just helping Needs. People and get better answers, and so that's why we're here. So it references some key phrases that I think if we understand how those work, it says it uses the traditional physician as expert model, right? And isn't that what we all want? We just want that person. We go to them and we lay our problems at their feet, and then they take care of all of it.
That's what we want.
I consider an alternative, highly paid professional as an example of how it's not, right? Okay. So let's say it's an attorney.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you go and lay your problem at an attorney's feet. They're going to take care of all of it, aren't they?
No.
But they're going to charge you huge amounts of money.
Yes, they are.
To spend the time to figure out what your problem is.
Yeah.
Our doctors don't have the opportunity to spend a lot of time trying to research, and isn't it legal research? That's what attorneys get paid for. You know, I saw a cartoon once, you know, well, can you help me with that? Well, I can research it for you, right? And that was just the key phrase. Well, I can research that. So our doctors don't have that opportunity. Our medical system isn't designed around paying doctors to do the research to really find the solutions. And hospitals and medical systems will say that they are always developing best practice. That best practice may not be the best practice for you. It just is the best practice for them and the reasons that they're practicing those practices may not be because it's the healthiest option. It's the safest option.
Safest and maybe quickest, I dare say.
Absolutely quickest, safest, and least likely to cause litigation.
Yeah.
I think that's probably the first thing on the list, least likely to cause litigation. And then we go down, and somewhere along the line is your health is on their list. You need to flip that script and make your health priority. But that means you have to be committed to that. You have to actually be engaged and know some things so that you can have a conversation with your doctor. I don't know of a single physician that would not appreciate somebody coming in already having a good understanding so that they can build on it. Instead of the doctor feeling like, well, I have to walk them through this slowly.
Well, and a lot of us guys in particular, we don't even want to go to the doctor. And so, of course, we don't want to talk about what's wrong.
Right. Yeah. You never tell them what's wrong. And so they're blindsided by it.
I'm fine. It's no big deal.
Yeah. well, yeah, my leg's broken, but I was able to walk in here. Yeah. I'm good.
Bone sticking out of the skin. It's compound, but whatever.
Yeah. That'll heal. You know, it'll scab over and be just fine. you know, or any of those other problems. And we could go down a long list and embarrass everybody in the room. Yeah. Of all the things that people aren't willing to talk about. Okay?
Let's not. I know sometimes you like to do that. Let's not.
You mean like a whole show on fecal incontinence?
Yeah. Just like that.
I don't think that's a problem in the room, but anyway.
No. It,
Good point.
You're in denial. You're denying.
Oh, Richard. Shame on you.
Yeah. We could have a lot of fun today. But I hope that what we're going to do is get people to understand that the system has changed. And this history that was explained in this is really quite incredible. So they talk about how we were at fee-for-service for a long time. And then in the 1980s, and I don't know if many of you noticed this, but my wife and I both said, yeah, we remember when HMOs kind of came into their prime.
Oh, yeah.
Prior to that, there was some insurance, right? And it was normally catastrophic insurance.
Yeah.
But then the health maintenance organization came in, and that word, that phrase, is important to understand. They took over the decision making about how healthcare was going to be distributed.
And none of us imagined that, right? Like when it was first touted, oh, it sounded wonderful. You have options of HMOs or PPOs, and one means that you can choose your own provider, and it's a little more expensive, and the other one is within a network of providers, but we have everybody that you could possibly choose from, and it just seemed like, oh, this is perfect, until it rolls out and you start to feel the impact on it. And you start to realize, or of it rather, and then you start to realize, wait a second. And it took years for it to really make itself, you know, apparent what was happening.
Yeah, it had to get to critical mass. It had to be enough people being affected by it that we started seeing the results of that large group.
But who among us hasn't experienced where you go to the doctor's office and you get 20 minutes face-to-face with the doctor if you're lucky? He's running in the room, you know, asking a couple questions, smiling at you, shaking your hand, and he's off, and the assistants are in. And why is that?
Because the HMO said, we're only going to pay you for 20 minutes, to pay for all of your staff.
Well, we're paying you X amount of dollars.
Yeah.
So to pencil out the expense, right, and the expense of billing insurance companies, outrageous.
Right. So the doctor has to see X number of patients a day. That's why they now have a large waiting room with a pool of people to flow into their exam rooms, which are small little cubicles that you go and sit in and wait for the doctor to show up because he just got done with another patient.
I think it's important to emphasize, it's not that the insurance company said to the doctors, you only get 20 minutes. It was the result of the obligation that they imposed on them that resulted in having to see so many more patients to make it worthwhile, to make the industry worthwhile, which we'll talk a little bit more, but that's now, you know, after this implementation and seeing the consequences of this rollout. And now there's other ways to see doctors that don't use insurance companies called concierge.
Well, yeah, but so going back to that, doctors were paid well when they were, you know, doing this fee-for-service basis.
Right.
They are still paid well. However, no longer are they providing care for a patient for 45 minutes or an hour maybe and spending some time with them and then having some time to go back and figure things out. Now they get paid well to see dozens of patients a day and having to do all this charting and put this record in, but there's no ability to provide a whole lot of time to consider a patient, right? And we're, again, when we are looking at care, we're looking at the same care doesn't work for everybody. It's specific to you because you may have, as we've talked about, chronic problems. You may have more than one, and one solution for one chronic problem might create another. And so your care has become more complex than it was when we only called the doctor when we had one critical issue that had to be addressed right now. Now with these long-term issues where we're taking more drugs to solve some problems which cause other problems that we have to then take drugs for, and we have a patient that was on 37 meds.
Wow.
Because he was having problems because some of the drugs that he was taking, so the solution was, well, let's give you a different drug. And those drugs cause other problems, and so they're trying to, on this scale, balance it by adding and adding and adding drugs instead of saying, wait a minute, let's take those away and see where we're at. You know, when we're talking about painkillers that are really effective for a short period of time, become not effective in the midterm, and then become detrimental in the long term because they actually sensitize our bodies to pain so that we feel like we need more of those drugs. But when people are on drugs for 2 or 3 or 4 years or 10 years, all of a sudden that becomes the baseline and they can't live without them. Yeah. So just some sideline advice for you. If you are given a painkiller, you need to decide how long you really need to take that. And the shorter your decision, the better for you.
Well, you should also recognize that they all have recommendation on their duration. And that's because they actually start to cause the symptoms that you're trying to mask.
Wow.
So instead of you adding more medications, they start to adversely affect you by causing phantom pains. So it's better to get off of that one and try another one. It's actually more advantageous to our body if we keep it, because our bodies adapt to them, we keep them guessing. We keep our body, not
surprised.
Surprised at the new one so that we don't get those phantom pains that we're not able to cure.
The other thing, back to the doctor, the kind of the conveyor belt attitude of going to doctors nowadays is I think most people our age and younger, that's all we've ever known.
Yeah.
You know, I don't remember going to a doctor and spending an hour in his office talking about my problems. Right. My parents do, but I don't.
Right.
So we're getting used to that, but we may not be adapting. And I think that might be the key term is.
Well, we're getting better.
Right. Well, we're used to that's what the style is, right? You set the appointment, you go wait in the waiting room with 40 or 50 other people, and then randomly you get pulled up and sent into the room for a few minutes, and then you walk out thinking, well, I guess I'm done with that. But getting used to and adapting where we actually figure out, okay, so what is our plan in this new world medical system? How do we make that 20 minutes worthwhile? How do we capitalize on what we are going to get for the amount of investment that we make? You know, sitting in that waiting room for half an hour, 45 minutes, only to get that short period of time. You can't waste time. You have to come with a good understanding yourself of where we're starting. And there's a lot of places that we can find that information. We've talked multiple times on the radio about getting your doctor's narratives and plan of care. You know, ask them for that because that is their toolbox. That's the information that they have, all of their specific information that they think is important about you. I think you should know what your doctor thinks is important about you.
So let me emphasize on that one just to be a little bit clearer about it. If you ask for your medical records, there is literally a tab that is the family-friendly record. Okay, so that is, you know, your test results, your labs, it's the answers to your diagnoses. If you've had a CT scan, it's, you know, the doctor saying, this is what I found in the CT scan. But it's not the opinion statements and the little notes that the doctors make to themselves so that next time you come in, they don't have to look at your 20-year history. They can just look at a bird's eye view of what they remember right then that they want to remember as important the next time they see you. That gets right back down to that 20 minutes that they have to you for you. And I don't mean to sound cynical about it. It's just the reality. And it's not that your doctors don't have big hearts and aren't doing the best they can navigating the system. What's important to us is that you understand their position so that you can capitalize and make it the best system for you, too.
Mm-hmm. So if you can get those plans of care and those narratives, those are the two parts of your medical records that you really want. And you don't have to ask your doctor for that. You can call your doctor's office and just ask, who can I speak to get a copy of my medical records? And ask for those medical records specifically saying that. So then you have the doctor's playbook, don't you? Now you can be part of the team because you actually know what the doctor knows and you guys can have a good discussion instead of him or her having a conversation with you about some baseline things, you know, like, well, these test results, this is how you to read those. I don't need to read the test results. What I want is to be involved in the expert conversation. And so if you can have that conversation with them and they can then give you a higher order explanation of, well, as an example, well, I have this pain. Okay, I'll give you a drug for that. Well, I have this pain that is caused because of these things in my life right now. Oh, well, maybe we can do this without a drug. Maybe we can do this with something
massage
else.
Massage therapy.
We love massage therapy. I mean, I think everybody Not everybody. There are people who do not love massage therapy.
There are absolutely people that don't love massage
And we back
therapy.
You up on that. We support you in that.
But there's a difference between a therapeutic massage and a clinical massage, right?
Yeah.
If you just go to the massage therapist and you have some relaxing music, maybe a dim room and some aromatherapy, you feel like $1 million when you come out of there, and it felt really, really good. There's a difference when somebody is clinically trained in massage therapy. It might be lymphatic draining. It might be, you know, that muscle tension, tendon tension relief. It's a different type, and it's a medical clinical massage therapy is slightly different.
So your doctor isn't going to be able to read. Here, let me just read this quote. The number of journal articles, technology assessments, and practical guidelines that any provider must read to stay current is now well beyond human capacity, and the rapid evolution of care practices and availability of many therapeutic alternatives compound this already overwhelming body of information available to guide clinicians during a visit. It's impossible for your doctor to do it all. And you may say, well, it's impossible for me to know everything about medicine. You don't need to know everything about medicine. You need to know about your issue. And that is something that we all have access to.
No more laying your cards on the table before the doctor and just saying, fix it. You do have to remember the small details, and you need to be proactive in bringing those up to the doctor and reminding him. And having that medical list, remember, with all the specialties now, your heart doctor isn't really talking the way you will to your kidney doctor. As a matter of fact, nobody sits in a team and discusses your care. It's up to you to take the information from the kidney doctor or your primary care doctor and go to your heart doctor with it. It's your obligation. Mm-hmm. It's your body. It's your health.
And so be actively engaged to be your own best medical advocate. One of the things that this article is really focused on and I think is important is they talk about evidence-based medicine, okay? Not just, well, we've had a study where this drug can do something, but a study where they say, well, that drug can do something, but we are comparing it against alternatives to see if there's really an advantage to one or the other. And there is very little studies being done in that. Some of the statistics they talk about, very little evidence exists on the comparative effectiveness of one course of treatment versus another. While 5% of the overall healthcare expenditure, 5%, of the money that's being spent on healthcare goes to research. The majority of it is spent on basic research and product development. Okay, so companies trying to develop a new product so that they can sell it and make money. That's where most of the research goes. The statistics are: it is estimated that currently less than 0.1% of the nation's $2 trillion health expenditure is vested in assessing the comparative effectiveness of available interventions. What does that mean? That means that we have a lot of choices in medicine, and your doctor may know 6 of the 9 options that are available. But if he's looking for an answer to the question, generally, there's probably not a great answer as to which is going to work better all the time, or most of the time, or a greater percentage of the time. Those studies aren't being done. What you need to do is look at the evidence and determine your best idea of what might work, and then have that conversation with your doctor and actually talk about it. Well, of the things that we could do, these were a couple that I looked at that I thought might be better for me specifically, and so can we talk about those? And if you do that, I think we're going to have a much better better way through this medical system that we have. We are running a little short on time, so let's give our phone number, 435-477-6999. Again, the easiest number in Southern Utah. Tell your friends. 477 on the left and 6999 on the right.
And I want to invite you all to find out more about us. Find out our story by going to our website at pathwayhospicecare.com. There you can find a little bit more about what palliative care really can be and why we're here.
And we enjoy meeting with all the other practitioners in town that are doing very specific and unique things, and we try and share those with our patients. But if you have questions about anything, you know, if it's hyperbaric chambers or cryotherapy or all of these things you may have heard of, and you just want to get a little information, we would love to share it with you. So give us a call. We'll always take those calls.
Thanks for being here, everyone.
Yeah, it's been a great day.
Great morning.